Sikorsky on this rush now from the left wing side, digging his way. Nice feed pass and a shot, score! Philadelphia as Tracy Kolesky set up a nice over-the-shoulder feed, and Philadelphia on the board, 1-0.
Welcome to the first edition of the Off the Crossbar podcast here on IsleIndoor.com for the 2014 season. Happy New Year to everybody. Hopefully you're all safe and sound after 1 week of the National Lacrosse League. The number one team in the land is tied for first in the East, and it's the Philadelphia Wings. And honestly, I'm going to say it, only one person that I know, okay, maybe two, actually picked the Wings to win. One of those people joins us on the show. He is the defensive coach for the Philadelphia Wings, former teammate of mine with the Victoria Shamrocks, and one of the best guys to come out of St. Catharines. He is Tom Hayek. Thomas, how are you?
Doing great, Teddy. Thanks for having me. Happy holidays.
Yes, to you as well. We find you in Philadelphia taking care of your two little girls. How's fatherhood?
It's actually been great. It's been, like people always say, it's one of the best experiences you ever have, and I can definitely reiterate that. It's busy. I've got two under 2 years old, so sleep's at a premium, but it's awesome. I love my girls. It's been great.
Now, what keeps you up later at night and sleepless? Two girls or coaching the Wings defense?
Yeah, without a doubt, it's my girls. I mean, the Wings D is it's a pleasurable group to coach. So that's the easy part, my girls, man. I haven't even started thinking about them being teenagers. That's going to really be the brain wrecker for me.
Your Wings defense played quite well this past weekend in your opening game of the year against the Buffalo Bandits, beating them handily 17-13. Let's start at the back end with your goaltender, Evan Kirk. Maybe a lot of people didn't know if he was going to be the starter this year with Brandon Miller getting franchised, but he has been given the reins. How well, from a defensive coaching standpoint, did he play?
I mean, Kirky, we knew, you know, when he's in Minnesota last year and a couple of years, and in the summer he's had, you know, he's a top flight tender in this league. You know, ideally our plan was to have both D and Kirky in. It hasn't quite worked out with the business and with D right now. But, you know, I was not surprised to see Kirky play as well as he did. I think that's his game. I think he can play even better. We can play better in front of him. But, you know, he's just trying to put him in a position that he's able to make stops, and that's what he did for us on Saturday night. So hopefully that continues.
What was your biggest concern going into Saturday night's game? You're bringing together a team that is very 50-50, almost split down the middle between offensive, defense, Canadians to Americans, and now you have to deal with a group of guys, many of which have never really played a high-level game of indoor lacrosse. What was your biggest concern?
I mean, I think this has been, for my second year coaching, and still it's consistency, and we seem to have big breakdowns in the middle games when our guys are playing well and are very focused in the game. They're very competent lacrosse players. We seem to have real big breakdowns, which a lot of Canadian-based teams don't have. I think our top-end talent is our potential. It's really high, but it's those breakdowns that really hurt. And I think we dressed two rookies, but we dressed three other guys, like CJ Costabile. He's played 8 box games in his life. you know, so coming into that, you got to give these guys time, and part of that is the experience and the consistency. And that's the biggest challenge with our group.
And he goes 19 out of 15 on the draws. Like, you can't ask much more for a guy with very little experience. 10 loose balls, even chips in an assist. You have a lot of guys that are just grit and sandpaper kind of guys, but also very green. And as you said, that consistency thing has to be huge for you night in and night out with this team. What's one of those sort of main stress points that you're giving these guys?
So I know playing against a lot of Americans, you know, when I played in the league and when you played in the league, it's the biggest thing is they get so over-aggressive. They struggle understanding spacing and a two-man game and a back pick and moving picks and whatnot. So we really kind of stress and try to put them in good positions to win one-on-one battles. to be very aggressive early in shot clocks, but then after that to stay tight. And we really stress the prime scoring area and protecting that prime scoring area mm-hmm. and then winning that one-on-one battle. So just simplifying it for them, not making it too complicated, but putting them in a position where they can be athletes, because they all throughout the league, I think I have the best 9 athletes in the back door. Mm-hmm. It's just if they can consistently play box across. I tell them all the time, if we play box across against Toronto, they're going to beat us every time.
Yeah.
If we turn into an athletic contest, we have a great chance. So
yeah.
We're trying to go.
Is that what you want out of your D guys? Is just the old keep it simple, stupid motto, when you get the ball, run like a bat out of hell?
No. We have some nice systems in place. We really try to press some guys, put some who we feel are slower footed, go guys, get them on the run, maybe mm-hmm. make decisions, trying to get D guys, they cross center, try to make them on the run, not trying to strip them, trying to let them kill shot clocks. And, you know, as far as what I love about my guys is that, you know, you get like a Brett Mann, he picks up a loose ball, and he's like a tiger in a cage, and he can just get out of there. Just he stops thinking, he just becomes an athlete, and
yeah.
clears the ball at the zone, which is great. But we stress a lot about running our patterns over our breakouts, making sure we have outlets for our guys. It's when it gets really hairy carries that we start making mistakes, we start shooting the wrong side of the floor, we start overplaying guys, and that's what we're trying to avoid.
Just by raw count, I believe you had 4 guys who played their first ever NLL game last night. Chad Widemeyer, John Rannigan, Brian McGill, and Garrett Toole. Which one of those guys impressed you the most?
You know who? I think Brian McGill is a heck of a lacrosse player, but Rannigan is really, Johnny's been awesome. He almost didn't make it out of our pre-agent camp, and his growth curve since then to that first game, it's just been astronomical. He gets better every time.
Yeah.
He asks questions. He's enthusiastic about it. And I think he's just going to become better and better the more he plays and more experience he has. I mean, Garrett's a great, he's an unbelievable fine burst as well. He's a big Army kid.
Mm-hmm.
Huge. He goes to the net. Reminds me of left-handed Jake Berge out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like all our rookies, but Randy's been, he's been impressive.
Garrett Toole actually drops the gloves in his first ever game. did he come back all deer in the headlights when he saw you after he got back out of the box fighting Billy D. Smith?
Not at all. Big smile on his face.
Nice.
One of the best things about these kids as well is they'd like box across, but it's so new to them that Garrett really doesn't know who Billy D. Smith is or who Rory is.
Yeah.
He doesn't really know.
Yeah.
I mean, Garrett's 6'5", 260. He doesn't really care, so that kind of naivety is scary,
yeah.
but it's also kind of exciting as well.
Did you maybe tap him on the shoulder and say, hey, next time make sure you know who you're fighting? Or just give him free reign?
No. I try to let him know that, you know. But he's a smart enough kid to know that he figures every guy in the league is a heavyweight, so he doesn't go in there thinking he's going to dominate. He's not looking to fight either. He just wants to stick up for himself, and he knows he's a big kid. But you know he's an Army guy, so
he can edit himself.
Lacrosse floor. He's a West Point grad, so not worried about him.
Yeah, the Denver Broncos have Peyton Manning, who's basically an extension of John Fox and that coaching staff. You guys have Brody Merrill. How important and integral is he to the development of this young D core?
Well, I'll tell you, Steve, you look at our D, and I was thinking about this the other day. Brody's my only Canadian on D, and I would say, I mean, the way we play lacrosse back there, there's not many Canadians that actually could probably play in this system because we have to play different. We can't play a traditional pack-in box like a lot of, like, you know, a Rochester would or Toronto does, or that aggressive trapping system.
Mm-hmm.
So for somebody like Brody to be able to do that, to step in and kind of change his game a little bit to play a little bit more like medium to play, it's been great. And he's, as far as on-field leadership, it's ridiculous. I think I learned much more from him than he does from me.
Yeah.
And he's just a constant rock out there. And the other big thing that I guess playing against him, I didn't realize that the number of minutes he logs and the hard minutes he logs, kind of like when Pronger was in Philly here, we were at the Flyers, so just logging big minutes and crunching minutes and giving me a chance to kind of stay in games.
He's an impressive specie out there, and we've known that ever since the first day they stepped in this league, and he has no issues with staying on the floor for 2 minutes at a time, playing both ends and getting up and down. What's been the biggest transition for you from being a grinder, stay-at-home D guy with filthy mitts on breakaways to becoming a coach?
Filthy mitts.
Come on, your breakaway move is legit. You and Andy Turner have the same breakaway move, and it's so good. No one stops it.
I put it on Kirky a couple weeks ago, and he crease called me pretty quick. I don't know if it's any good, but that's pretty funny. The biggest transition has been, it's been a pretty smooth transition. It's I couldn't play in the league now.
Yeah.
I mean, even in my prime, I don't think I could play for our team because that's how athletic I think our D guys are.
Mm-hmm.
It's been tough one, Teddy. Biggest transition.
Like, I know talking with a guy like Jimmy Quinlan, even a guy like Dan Teat, guys who have been in the league a long time and then make that change, one of the biggest things is trying to find that fine balance between being a player's buddy and being that coach and where that hard nose, hey, you know what, I kind of have to reprimand you at this point in time, where, you know, you're not a buddy anymore, you're a coach. A lot of guys have that as sort of the toughest transition, trying to find that I'm not in a jersey anymore and I'm a suit behind the bench kind of role.
Yeah, that's actually that's a really good one, because that I do struggle with that often. I mean, unfortunately, we've had a lot of turnover on our team in the last 2 years, which has been terrible for one reason or another. And we're trying to change that and kind of get some more retention here. But that is tough. And I mean, we have to let go of one of my best friends this year, Pat Heim, and that was a tough conversation. So not something you enjoy. But yeah, I think you're right. That is that. And I find myself, I used to like to chirp when I played. And I never respected coaches that chirped. So I find myself biting my tongue now and trying to be, you know, a little bit more mature about that. That's been a little bit tough too. I'm trying to jump across. Silly, but that's kind of what it is.
The Philadelphia Wings have been an ebb and flow over the last few years, and everyone talks about this Team America thing, but let's just get away from that. This is a team that is very well built, and you go into Buffalo, and maybe a lot of people are devaluing your win, saying, well, maybe Buffalo's not as good as everyone thinks he is, and Cosmo's not very good, and their defense gave up 70 shots. But you guys are a very good team, and you get this week off to maybe put some more systems in place and look at some film. But now you got to go in and you got to play the Rochester Nighthawks in 2 weeks. In Rochester, the defending champs, who are 1-0, how much of a test is that for you guys early on in this season?
Yeah, I think that's kind of what you base your season off of, where you stand when you play the best. And I would say right now, you know, between Edmonton and Roch, those are the two classes of the league. It's kind of like when the Blackhawks come into your building now, or the Bruins do. That kind of is a litmus test to see where you're at. So that's a great place for us to go into game two. I think the schedule maker has been kind of kind to us to get us a game under our belt and then get us a week off so we can see where our holes are and then try to address them. We play a lot of back-to-backs, but I think going into Roch is going to be an eye-opener for a bunch of our guys. But you know what? Buffalo was an eye-opener. That was a great crowd. That's a savvy savvy team there. We might have caught them on a little bit of an off night, but they're a good lacrosse team. They're going to have a heck of a year.
Yeah.
And so we're just trying to compete with the teams like that.
Tough weekend next weekend, not this coming weekend, but next weekend for you. You're at Rochester, then home to Buffalo Saturday, Sunday. Like, and then you play Minnesota, and then Minnesota in a home and home. You're getting five Eastern Conference games right out of the bat, and then a league where only the top three teams from each division make it. How important is it to get a hot start, especially in a very competitive Eastern Division?
I think in this, you know, there's not an easy game in this league. It's only nine teams now. It's like it's kind of any given Sunday, but we have been had some real tough back-to-backers, even last year and this year to start the year as well. So it's going to be important for us. You know, you can't get down. You can't start 1-4 or 1-5, and hope to have a great year, because, like you said, not every team makes the playoffs. It's really shortened it up. So we need to really go in the mindset that just kind of one game at a time, as cliche as it is, is kind of what we have to do it and reset. I think our team, it will be pretty good at that, be able to reset even if we don't have an income that's stable for us. So kind of reset and just focus on the next game at hand.
Speaking with Thomas Hayek, defensive coach with the Philadelphia Wings, a longtime Philadelphia Wing member as well. This is a question I've asked a lot of people, and we're going to kind of get out of today's game and go to years past. How is Jake Berge not in the Hall of Fame?
Good question. I think we're retiring his jersey this year. I know that. Yep. I live a couple miles, not even a couple miles, maybe a mile down the road from him. Jake was a special player. I didn't realize it my first year, how good he was coming off a knee injury. And then when he really came into his own, I thought that year was at 08 when Nuch scored those 72 or whatever he got that year. Yeah. I knew that Berge was just fast, strong, big. You practiced against him, God, he was a nightmare.
Yeah.
He was mean. I mean, he had a lot of things going for him. I think it's just a matter of time before he gets – would he be the first American?
I believe so. No, I think he would be the first, and it's and he'd be most deserving because he's got to be one of the best all-time Americans to ever play in the game. So to not even see him on ballots just continually blows my mind, and because he has to go down as not just, you know, I said this at one point, you know, can we call, you know, Casey Powell, one of the greatest Americans ever. And someone corrected me, and I think it might have been Phil Sanderson, said, let's just take the American out of the equation. He's damn well one of the best players to ever play the game. And that's how I feel about Jake Berge. And for some reason, the guy just gets no respect.
Yeah, I think playing in Philly hurts a lot of guys like that. You know, we're not in the lacrosse hotbed. That is the, you know, Southern Ontario and Lower Mainland there. So, you know, a lot of that's, and that seems where a lot of the lacrosse decisions come out in this league, which is unfortunate. So I think he was a little bit buried down here in Philly, but he won championships and put up big numbers and was a huge part with him and Tommy for years. Marichuk are just a nuisance. And then they had Ratcliffe down there on the right side. Just a tough right side to play again.
Remember Jeff Ratcliffe just throwing himself across creases just because he didn't care?
I was with him the other night. He told me, he said that one year Marty O'Neill counted how many crease calls, and he was something like 32 crease calls. The 28. He said he had 28 crease calls, both called back. I mean, that's a ridiculous amount of crease calls. And he said he scored 16 goals, I can't remember how many goals, but 16 that he scored legitimately should have been called back. So he was still... He got hosed on 12 goals or something. But God, he was good at it.
Yeah.
He was a dynamite.
Yeah, there weren't too many guys who could tiptoe the crease like he could.
And Gumby-like. You could, God, you could hit him in the back, and somehow you could just kind of...
Matrix through the crease.
Oh, God.
2003, you and I were teammates with the Victoria Shamrocks. Do you remember a 50-year-old Art Webster playing?
Yeah, I did. We were short. Where were we at in that game?
We were in Port Alberni playing a home-and-home North Shore. And we were
short
because a lot of our veterans were camping with their kids or whatever, and we pulled into service our assistant coach and Vancouver Stealth assistant coach Art Webster, who was running around with a wooden stick still.
Woody.
You had a lot of fun in Victoria, and you were sort of a part of a process of a lot of good Eastern guys coming out, and you spent some time playing in Burnaby. Let's talk about those years in Burnaby first. How did you get out west?
You know, it was so Andy Turner and I went out west that year in Burnaby. I think it was 99, and that was Andy's doing. We finished 98 in St. Catharines with the A's. Had a really nice run, lost to Six Nations in the finals, in the Ontario finals. And I went away and played hockey, and Andy called me one day and says, hey, what do you think about going to Burnaby? And I guess he contacted Paul Del Monte and got that thing rolling, and I was just kind of the passenger on the train.
Yeah.
Happy passenger, but I didn't have a ton to do with it.
Yeah. And then you're part of a Burnaby dynasty. You're in the middle of that nice long run of 10 straight provincial titles, Minto Cup after Minto Cup appearance, and then you become a Victoria Shamrock, and you start going on a run of Man Cups. Was there a better career move for you to come out west? Like, do you think you would have had that success if you would have stayed out east?
I mean, for me, it was more of a lifestyle decision.
It's pretty good life out here.
It's an unbelievable. And, you know, I think I did it the right way. Go to Vancouver first. Appreciate that. And then just go to the Heaven's Playground over there in Van Island and in Victoria. It seemed to work for me. It felt comfortable. Again, I owe everything to Andy. He got me to Victoria as well. And it just meant a lot of really great people out there, and really feel like I would, you know, in a heartbeat, I'd move out there if the times or the situation was right, because now that you do live in a gorgeous area.
Yeah. Do you still keep in touch with Turner?
I do. Here and there. You know Andy, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's a bit of a nomad and a Sasquatch, and he's out in there. But yeah, he was in my wedding, and here and there, probably twice or three times a year, we can move back and forth. Sometimes cryptic, sometimes not, but once in a while.
Your lacrosse career continues to evolve. You know, you were one of the toughest, littlest, meanest defenders I've ever seen, and now you become an assistant coach. Is there visions of possibly making the next step to be a head coach somewhere down the line for you?
I haven't really thought about it. I think where I am with my life and like my career outside on lacrosse and my young family, unfortunately, I don't think it's a time commitment I'm ready to do. So I'm very happy that, Glenn's great head coach and he gives you a lot of freedom, but, he takes on a lot of the nuances of the job that are time consuming, but maybe it's something that hopefully I can evolve into. I really do believe in the Philly model, though. I think it's great what we're trying to do down here, and I really believe in expanding the game. And, you know, you see, I'm a Twitter guy, but you grow the game all the time, and I'm a huge believer in that. So I think it box lacrosse. I try to tell these tall, field guys that if you come play box, you're going to be a better lacrosse player, period. Yeah. I don't care if you like field more, box more, where you're comfortable. You're just going to be a better lacrosse player. And I think once we kind of have them drink the Kool-Aid a little bit, 95% of them totally believe it and just end up loving it. And it's just kind of getting them to get that first step in there.
A few more minutes left here with Thomas Hayek before we let him go here in the Off the Crossbar podcast on iolindor.com, where once a week here on the website, we'll talk with somebody throughout the lacrosse community. We, you know, profess growing the game and, you know, introducing new people to it. You have Slovakia roots. Could we see, you know, you start to branch out and maybe bring some of your expats over?
I heard didn't the juniors, they have a Czech kid?
Yeah. Right now is Dominic. Now I can't think of his name. Yeah, they had one. He came over and had a pretty good, you know, start in Victoria. And there's been a few guys who have come over and played some senior B ball there. But it, you know, obviously you were born there. You're a Canadian now, living in America. You probably have like 48 passports and green cards. But the game continues to grow. How cool is that to see from when we were growing up and you never heard about anything outside of Ontario and BC?
It is awesome. It's awesome to see those guys in Europe. And I mean, I don't know how much you spent or talked to them, but even the guys in Slovakia and the Bratislava guys, they're so passionate about the game and they just love it. They soak up so much information. And I'm ashamed of myself that I don't reach out to them more and become more involved. Just a function of time and money for the most part, but it's just so cool to see and anything you can give them, they just love it and are very thankful for and just love the game. And that's the kind of game it is, though. It's kind of that infectious game that once you get into it, it becomes an obsession.
2013 is pretty much out the window as we speak. Do you have a highlight from the year? Can be personal, can be lacrosse, sports-wise, anything. Highlight of 2013.
September 27th, my second daughter was born, without a doubt. The easiest answer.
You know what? Sometimes the easiest answers are the best answers. Thomas, I appreciate you giving us some time. It's been a while since you and I have caught up, so I really appreciate this, and I know we'll talk to you soon. Congratulations on a huge win for your Wings. Enjoy the week off, and we'll be watching as you guys take on the Rochester Nighthawks in 2 weeks' time in Rochester.
Great. Yeah, great. Appreciate it. And I, you know, I sincerely thank everything you do for lacrosse and spread the word. I mean, I think it's great. I think you run a quality product. I listen to your podcast, and it's real quality. So I thank you for that.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. It's always nice to hear from guys who actually do listen to the show, because sometimes I don't think, not sure if anyone does. Thomas, thanks for talking to us, and I'm sure we'll catch up soon, and I'll be seeing you on the floor in weeks to come.
Awesome, TJ. Talk to you, buddy.
There he is, Thomas Hedder Hayek, defensive coach of the Philadelphia Wings, joining us on the first edition of the Off the Crossbar podcast here on ilindoor.com. That's one in the books. We have many, many more to go. Plus, we have two huge games this weekend in the National Lacrosse League. Calgary Roughnecks open their season against the Toronto Rock in Toronto at the ACC. Still not sure why that game isn't on TSN, or TSN2 being an all-Canadian matchup. But there is one game on TV, which is on TSN2, and that is the Vancouver Stealth kicking off their season against the Colorado Mammoth in Colorado. Be an interesting game. Will the Gavin Prout curse continue for the Mammoth? And can the Vancouver Stealth continue their trek towards NLL championship gold? I guess they're starting their trek because they haven't played a game yet. Regardless, it's going to be a crazy weekend. Only two games. And then the NLL gets in full swings, because by the time this weekend's over, every team will have played a game in the NLL. Got to get you out of here. Next week, we'll talk to you again. Who will join us? Even I don't know. We just got to wait for the phone to ring. Thanks for tuning in. Follow me on Twitter at Off the Crossbar. Email me, otcb@teamradio.ca. Let me know who you want to hear from, any questions you might have about the show. And if you want to sponsor the radio show, let me know. Drop me an email. I can try to get you on board with the best show in the history of the world. Maybe. We'll talk to you next week right here on OTCB and NLL Radio.